So the Labor Party has focused on how to get out a vote. It's real learning from what has gone on in the US. So, for instance, on the day of the election, they were sending out messages and phone calls aimed at 18 to 30-year-olds in, now, if you know Perth, the Mount Lawley Highgate area, which is really close into the city, looking at former uni students or uni students who had happened to have weekend work over the years, penalty rates.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Australian Politics Live. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I am also the host of this show. This week, we are going to do a quick wash-up of the Super Saturday by-elections because those weekend contests were important because they give us a signpost for the federal election contest, which Christopher Pyne very helpfully told us on Sunday will be next May. Next May. Just looking at my colleagues here. In the studio, speaking of colleagues, in the studio with me is Amy Romekis.
Hello.
Who is a Guardian Australia's live blogger extraordinaire and all-around great woman, and also all-around great woman with loads of experience reporting Queensland politics on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, Amy, welcome. And no stranger to subscribers of this podcast, Shane Wright.
Hello. I thought it was rude to interrupt.
I'm kind of amazed.
You're good with words.
I'm good with words.
Kind of amazed. That's actually the longest. Back. That's the longest you've ever gone.
I know, but I was just being polite.
Of course, he is.
Polite person from the West Australian.
From the West Australian. Thank you, Shane Wright, West Australian, who does economics and is generally wise in the studio with me to decant the contents of his economic brain, but also does politics for the West Australian. And one thing that we are all resolved on in the studio is that the West Australian contests in the Super Saturday by-elections have really flown under the radar. So
I think we're having to tell people that there were two by-elections in Western Australia, which had the lowest by-election turnouts on record and the lowest turnout since 1922.
Is that right?
And I will ask Amy, what's important about 1922?
Oh, Collingwood.
No.
Oh, my God.
Good effort. But it was the last election under voluntary voting in this country. It was that election.
Why would I know that? Was I around in 1922?
I was. Are you saying I was and that Murph was?
Well, no. Sometimes I don't know, Shane.
That's all right. Sometimes that was the election where turnout was so low. In Perth, that election, the turnout was 46% or something, that the government of the day said, we're going to compulsory voting. And to this day, we are. I think there's only one or two other countries in the world that have compulsory voting, which in democracies, as opposed to gun at the head, you're going to vote sort of elections.
Yes, setups. Well, we're in WA. We've landed in WA, everyone. So let's stay there for a bit. So, apart from the fact that turnout was very low, which one presumes just as a standing supposition relates to the fact that it wasn't a head-to-head major party contest.
That's right. The Liberal Party packed up its bags.
Went home in a half.
It did because this was one of the interesting things that's going on in WA, where at the last election it was 55-45 to the Liberal Party, and they hold 11 of the 17 seats over there. The Liberal Party said, we can't afford to spend money on Perth. Now, Perth had a margin of about 3 points. And if you're giving up running a candidate there, it's telling you, one, you don't have much money, although the Liberal Party has spent a little bit of money over there. And two, there's another factor. His name is Malcolm Turnbull, and he is like pork chop in a synagogue sort of support over there at the moment in WA.
Why don't they like him? Why don't they like him?
They really liked Tony Abbott, And there is a reason Tony Abbott often still comes over to WA. If I was to say to you that the Prime Minister of Australia has made one visit to Western Australia this year, which was in April on his way back from his European tour, and he will be there in August for the state conference, and they may be the only two occurrences of a prime ministerial sighting in Western Australia this year. Now, that is telling you something that, I'm not that bright, but it tells me a lot that if you can't bring your prime minister over to a state that has had a long
history of being blue,
like this is a seat, the state only returned three ALP members at the 2013 election, and that was very close as it was, then there is a real problem in Western Australia. And so absent from the field, and so the ALP has used Perth and Freo as a bit of a natural experiment to try out some things, and that is of interest to people on the East Coast because you will see some of these things turn up in the next 6 to 9 months.
Which is exactly why I wanted to sort of unpick this a little bit, and we will get to Amy in Queensland and Malcolm Turnbull in Queensland very shortly.
Similar story.
Spoiler alert.
He's got friends everywhere.
Spoiler alert. Similar story. Anyway, but let's stick with the West. So Labor tried some things in those two contests in Perth and Fremantle, which we're likely to see replicated on the East Coast or in the national contest, thanks Christopher Pyne, next May. Yep. Tell us about it.
Right. So, for instance, one of the big issues was a get out to vote. They knew that there was going to be a low turnout because if 20 to 30% of the voting public who in, say, 40% of the voting public people voted for the Liberal Party in Perth last election. Where are they going to go?
Yes. Well, who do they vote for?
Well, they don't turn up, or they vote for all sorts of odds and bods, and which is largely what they did. So the Labor Party has focused on how to get out a vote. It's real learning from what has gone on in the US. So, for instance, on the day of the election, they were sending out messages and phone calls, little ads on text, on Spotify, on YouTube, aimed at 18 to 30-year-olds in, now if you know Perth, the Mount Lawley Highgate area, which is really close into the city, looking at former uni students or uni students who had happened to have weekend work over the years, penalty rates. That's what they were focusing
on. That's some micro-targeting.
That is micro-targeting, but this is what they've been able to do. There was a by-election at the state level about 4 weeks earlier where they tried the same thing, different focus, and it had failed. And they can see, that didn't work. So they're trying different things. One of the interesting things that went on is, now Bill Shorten has for the last 3 years been in every town hall across this country, and I know everyone knows that, and anyone's listened to him knows that he's been able to really handle questions from the floor.
He is good
and
in
get
that
his message
format.
Out.
Yeah, yep, he's good.
So he has done plenty of town halls in WA, but because of what was going on the East Coast, he didn't manage to do one this time. But he did what was called a tele town hall. Mm-hmm. So 40,000 calls went out to voters in Perth and Freo saying you can listen in and ask questions of Shorten, Josh Wilson, Labor's candidate in Freo, and Patrick Gorman, the Labor candidate in Perth. So it's set up for a Wednesday night, and it was a bit of a worry for the Labor Party because they couldn't vet the questions. Mm-hmm. So
it's just unfiltered. Yep.
As opposed to the Q&A audience where you know what sort of questions you're going to get, these were absolutely unfiltered. And so it's a bit difficult to track how long people stayed on, but they were able to work out that 12,000 people listened in for at least 10 minutes. Mm. Now, if you are getting 12,000 prospective voters to listen to Shorten, Fraser and Wilson, and Gorman for 10 minutes, that's a really good use of your limited funds.
And how do the Greens go? Because obviously we all paid a lot of attention in the Batman by-election to this progressive on progressive contest in Victoria. Was it last year?
This year.
I know. It's unbelievable. Anyway, so we all watch that a lot, but because of the lack of a major party candidate, there wasn't a national focal point to watch these contests in WA. So we've had basically a Batman by-election in two elections in Perth playing out over the last how many weeks. So what's the wash-up? How'd the Greens go?
Badly.
Yeah,
it's
pretty. Right.
And Richard Di Natale had made one visit late in the campaign, but now at the state level, that the Fremantle seat has been held by the Greens previously, but Fremantle at a federal level takes in a lot more what we would call the urban mums and dads in homes, that sort of demographic. Their primary vote went down. Now that is if you are in the Greens, you should be knocking your head against some sort of organic brick and saying, what the hell has gone on that we've lost votes when there's only five candidates. Into Perth, slightly better. They've lifted their primary vote but still they didn't lift their primary vote as much as the Labor Party did.
Mm.
And there has been this theory that Perth, the seat itself, as it changes demographically, will become more green. but they still didn't manage to do that. The Animal Justice Party picked up a bit. And this was one of the other issues. Perth had 15 candidates. So Labor Party topped the poll. Greens, informal, was in at number three. And there's some booths where it's about 13% informal vote, mm-hmm. where people have got confused. And this is going back to the changes that were made to the voting system. The Senate, where you can go to six now, fancy that, they found a lot of people get to six.
Oh, so they thought they were confused yep. with the Senate.
A bit of confusion there. People going to 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. cut off, and people doubling up in numbers because you had so many numbers, and which is what you see in seats where you get a lot of candidates. You can often see that. But again, focused into particularly the northern edges of the seat where there's a large Italian, Chinese, Vietnamese, Catholic background, there's still people in that space, and that's where the biggest informal votes were. But what was coming through from the scrutineers, again, those informal votes, there was a fair bit of Labor vote in that, but that it's interesting that those issues that people have lost interest in about the changes to the voting systems from 2016
have a long tail.
They've picked up in something like Perth.
Mm, interesting. All right. Well, North, you said, is our Q.
FNQ.
FNQ to change geographical regions. So, Amy Longman, you went up there for
about 2 weeks.
Yes, it was more than a week.
Yeah.
So you were on the ground there. Describe what you saw.
So, I mean, Queensland is my home territory. So Caboolture, Longman, Bribie Island, not new to me. But what I noticed this time round is that this was an electorate. It was just so tired of all of the election bullshit. Really. I mean, this Caboolture, just so people understand it, it's in between the Sunshine Coast and Brisbane. It's where you stop on the highway if you're travelling to the Sunshine Coast or going back to Brisbane. It's the main stopping part. It's a bit agriculture, bit retirement, bit downtrodden. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But it had been hit with just every single ploy that every political party had. It had One Nation in its face. It had Labor in its face. It had the Liberal Party in its face.
It's crowded.
Yeah, and it's 140,000 voters. So these people were coming across all three political parties quite frequently. So I spoke to, you know, hundreds of people while I was there just to get a feel of what was happening.
They had journalists in their face,
well,
obviously.
They had journalists, and that's not a lie. The entire country's media organisations camped out in Longman. 11 weeks is a really long time to have, you know, interlopers in your town. So they were, by the time I got there halfway through, they were over it and not shy about telling me that they were over it. But not only were they fatigued, they also didn't know what they were fatigued about. Mm-hmm. The fact that the by-election was happening hadn't actually really cut through. They just knew that there was a whole bunch of people who were interested in them, but they weren't quite
really
sure why.
Joining the dots. Yeah, well, that is pretty weird. Let's think about it. So what about the messages on the ground? Because unlike the WA contests, this was a major party head-to-head, notwithstanding mm-hmm. the One Nation factor, which is obviously significant.
In Queensland, that, One Nation would be considered a major party.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's call it a three-way, right?
Yep.
And so that's a different dynamic to the Perth contest. So what were the messages? What were the major party messages and One Nation's messages?
Well, the Liberal Party came at it setting this up as a contest for Bill Shorten. And I think that may have been one of their biggest mistakes in their campaign, because all of their core flutes, all of their election signage was "you cannot trust Bill Shorten." And so they came at it with, "we're going to talk about company tax, we're going to talk about how shifty Bill Shorten is." Whereas Labor turned it around and said, "we're going to talk about penalty rates, we're going to talk about health, and we're going to talk about on-the-ground issues that matter to you." And One Nation ran with, "you know, you cannot trust Bill Shorten. Also, we noticed that, you know, ICE is a big problem here. We're going to tackle that." So it was a mixture of really targeted local issues combined with what we're seeing on the federal sphere. But the thing is, with Caboolture, it is the place where this class warfare that we're seeing Labor and the Liberals set up federally, it was the perfect testing ground for that. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, is why Labor's campaign of, you know, you're not being treated the way that you should be, you're not sharing in the prosperity the way that you should be, you haven't had a fair go, managed to cut through a lot more than, hey, we're giving company tax rates and that's great and the nation's going great, the economy's going great and you should give us another go to keep doing that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because if you think about all of us, you know, the last federal campaign, it was Malcolm Turnbull was kind of like, it's all fine, exciting, it'll be great. Versus Labor, not so fine, and that didn't work for them very well. But I suppose they're assuming that there's a turn in the economy and that people might be feeling a bit better, and so you can deploy a bit more positive message. But obviously it didn't work for them. Now, what are the consequences, do you think, Amy, for the LNP of the poor result in Longman? What are the consequences?
Well, it was a poor result. I mean, they saw their primary vote drop by 10 percentage points. And if you're Peter Dutton in Dixon, a neighbouring electorate, you're panicked by that. If you're Luke Howarth in Petrie, you're panicked by that. If you're down in Ford, you're panicked by that. I mean, Queensland is where the election is going to be won and lost. Labor has identified 10 seats that they think that they can win, 7 that are definitely, you know, high targets of theirs, and they're all quite marginal. So if you suddenly have an election campaign that worked for your opposition, where they're saying, you're okay to be angry, but here are the answers, we're going to stand against One Nation and we're going to pick up the people who were disaffected from the Liberal Party, their primary vote is going to come to us. That is a problem for the LNP, because how do you counter that? And suddenly you're looking at Bill Shorten and Labor winning the election just in Queensland alone.
Mm. And Malcolm Turnbull, just to put our two bookends together, unpopular in Perth. What about Queensland?
He's unpopular north, I would say, of about the Sunshine Coast, which is central Queensland, north Queensland. There's a lot of seats there.
I think Phil Khoury refers to it as the Gympie line.
Well, yeah, there's the
Gympie. Or the Caboolture Channel now. Yeah. It might have moved south.
I would probably say it's more, Gympie's a little bit further out. I mean, Noosa. Maybe we'd go for the Noosa net.
I think Noosa. I think Malcolm would be fairly popular.
Yeah,
I think
Noosa would give him a nice welcome.
Oh, well.
And Brisbane would. But, I mean, Malcolm Turnbull turned up 5 times in Longman. And I know that there are a lot of people in the LNP who were saying, well, that was a mistake because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't go well here. Bill Shorten turned up 8 times and he's not overly popular in Longman either. Peter Dutton turned up several times in Longman and you would think, and including the last day, and you would think that he was the perfect foil to Malcolm Turnbull, particularly in Queensland. But that didn't work either. So Malcolm Turnbull isn't popular in big parts of Queensland where they need to retain those 21 seats, and that's central and it's the north, and it's going to be a big problem for them.
Well, let's stick with big problems, and let's sort of now go back to the federal contest, guys. So with these by-elections, what have we learned in terms of implications for the federal contest? What have we learned, Shane?
Well, starting point is, remember there's been a redistribution in Victoria and the ACT and the SA. The Labor Party has picked up notionally 3 seats. So
just from the standing start.
Starting point, and that means Malcolm Turnbull needs to win seats to retain office, not just to hold office. And that's a huge problem, you can see it coming away. So you look through Braddon and you've gone, right, line ball, but you haven't made any ground really in that spot.
And Braddon was so much about local issues as well. Tasmania was different again to Longman and to WA, and that it was really about local Tasmanian issues. And we saw that with the independent Craig Garland picking up such a huge swath.
Although,
of that vote.
In fairness, we need to note, of course, that the Libs did a lot better in Braddon. Mm-hmm. Braddon. I say this all the time. Why do I think Braddon is Bradman?
Well, they need a statue, don't they, down there? Yes. In fact, you need to spend more time in Penguin.
I don't know.
And have a penguin pie.
Obviously, have penguin. Anyway, sorry. We need, for fairness, we need to note that the Libs did better in Braddon than they did in Longman, and certainly
but their primary
in Perth
vote fell.
Where their primary vote still fell. Yeah, no, that's right. So okay, so we've got the next federal contest. We've got Malcolm Turnbull going into that election already behind.
And you're looking at May 11, May 18, if we're to take Christopher Pine at his word. They're the two dates that stand out. Working back, We have the March 23 New South Wales election, which is going to consume time and resources for everyone. The November Victorian by-election, which is going to consume time and resources of everyone. The poor voters of Longman or Perth or Braddon or Mayo.
Over it.
Absolutely over it. How many, like that's something the Labor Party in WA has picked up. People are over it because they've been in constant electioneering. Yeah, well, so you look, if you're in Western Australia, you've gone 2016, federal poll. 2017, state poll. 2018, they've had a state by-election and two federal by-elections.
Mm.
Tasmania, you're in the same sort of...
Same, Queensland, same thing. Election late 2017. Then all of a sudden you've got like this by-election that went for 11 weeks. It's a really long time to ask people to care about politics.
Mm. And next, if you go to an election next year, the whole first half of the year is a long,
oh, it's just on. It's just on.
It's not on, yeah. Mm. And so you and I will be going even further grey compared to what we are, Murph.
Yes,
and
sadly
the poor,
true.
Poor voters will be
just well and truly over it. Okay,
that's right.
All right. Well, let's just think about this. The opinion polls have told us, really, since the outcome of the last federal election, that Malcolm Turnbull almost lost. That Labor will win the next election. That's what the polls have told us consistently. The contest has tightened in recent times, but Labor is still ahead. Speaking now, today, in the studio, do we think that's right, Amy?
I do. A feeling on the ground from Queensland particularly, I think people are in the mood for change. They want something different. And I do not think company tax is enough of a vote winner, to use, you know, Tony Abbott's words there, to capture people's heart and minds on this. I don't think anyone is going to say, hey, you giving a tax break to all of our wealthy companies is actually going to do anything for me.
Mm-hmm. I think they got partly goes back to the budget and the tax cut. About how smart they were that will give $400 or $500 to a lot of Australians, like 90% of Australians. But the problem is people don't see that until they do their tax until their tax returns in August, July next year. And that was always an issue with it. And Labor went and matched it straight off.
Doubled it.
That's right. The thing, and this is my economics hat still on the head, is that so much is about wages. If there was a turn in wages, and the problem is for Malcolm Turnbull, the time frame isn't there for
time lag is.
I think you would actually see him. It actually would help him and the government get some sort of kick along. You look at the polls; Labor's primary vote is up from where it was at the election, 2 to 3 points, in an election that was 50.5 to 49.5. 2 or 3 primary votes will get you there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Labor's focused on, and getting that primary vote. And that was another thing out of Labor in WA. They weren't all that worried about preferences. They said, we've got to win this on primary.
Same in Longman. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And
they did.
Yeah. Mm. And it's clear Turnbull's primary vote has improved from where it was at the start of the year, but it is still short of where they were in 2016.
Last election, and we said, a minute ago, 3 seats behind. Okay, so last question. What do we think the government needs to do to change this dynamic, Amy?
I think looking at Queensland, and I'm looking at Queensland not just in the southeast, which is, you know, quite similar to Sydney and Melbourne, but the rest of Queensland, the decentralised part, which is quite working class, which are the seats that they need to win. It's the seats that the Nationals need to win. They need to work out how do they deal with One Nation, because they haven't adequately done that. Labor's taken a stand and have proven that they not only are not losing votes to One Nation, but they're actually picking up One Nation voters in preferences as coming back to them, whereas the LNP and the coalition more widely keep losing votes to One Nation because they've legitimised them in terms of saying, you know, we work with them, it's okay, which is basically saying it's okay to vote for them. So they need to work out how to deal with One Nation. They also need to work out how they talk to people who are not within the business community or within the business class, who feel, despite what they keep telling us about the economy, that they are not getting that prosperity back. Mm. They're not feeling it. And it doesn't matter how many numbers you throw at them. If you're talking to people who feel lucky to have two jobs because it means that they can keep food on the table and keep their kids in school, you can't just say to them, this is better than it's ever been, if they're not feeling that way.
Mm. Yes, Shane?
I would have gone to – I'd go to policy. Mm-hmm. We talk about the company tax cuts, and that is a policy they've held since 2016, okay? But outside of company tax cuts, we've got a personal income tax cut off into the never. And again, this is like the company tax cut. This is the thing that rolls on for 7 years. I think they're being let down in the policy space because trying to grab something, and Josh Frydenberg has done, you can see Josh doing quite well in terms of he's got a policy to argue in around the neg. Argue what you like about the particular policy, because if you go down the streets of Longman, I'd say no one would understand what the neg stands for. Mm. But at least it has given them something to discuss. And you could see the way Turnbull talked about Snowy 2.0. However, you look at the budget and it's policy poor in terms of something that you can grab imagination. Now, Turnbull is an imagination, big picture, follow me over the rampart sort of bloke. He hasn't got that. And I think they actually need to go looking at their policy space and think a little bit outside the box, because that one that would actually give the ALP conniptions, because they'd have to react in a different way, because they know where the attack is coming from, Turnbull. So that's easy. Yeah, I can come up with ways to deal with that. You need to be a little bit flexible, like the innovative and agile aspect of Turnbull died in a CSIRO briefing room 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if science is where you'd go with innovative in policy, but yeah.
Something that convinces people that you've got a plan maybe for the next couple of decades.
Cue the immigration debate.
Oh, God. Yep. No. That's where the curtain comes down. Anyway, thank you both for joining me. That's gorgeous people. Thank you so much for that conversation. Thanks to you guys for listening. We really do appreciate it. Don't forget to subscribe if you happen to like the listening. If you want to hear Shane Wright and Amy Remekus come back into this studio, you do need to subscribe.
We'll reference more 1980s music too.
Oh, no, the other war in the office. Yes, no, immigration and 80s music is not getting into this podcast today. Anyway, be well. See you next time.
When two tribes go to war.
Bye.